This episode of the podcast would not be possible without the support of our fantastic sponsor, Everyday Lines. Anyone in the Devonport area may be able to identify a tall, skinny, passionate bloke who you see running and riding absolutely everywhere. For those who don't know, that's champion runner and great bloke Brian Lyons. Brian's also a running coach and mentor, and his Everyday Lions running coaching programs are inclusive and cater for all age groups from kids right up to retirees. Training sessions are held in different locations from the Devonport area to Burnie, and you can choose from group training, 8, 12, 16-week or yearly programs. Whatever your goal is, Brian will help you smash it, as many have with his proven coaching techniques. You can find Brian at Everyday Lions on Facebook, Instagram, or at his website, www.everydaylions.org. And while you're at it, look out for some of the fantastic events organised by Everyday Lions Events, including Run Devonport, the Great Train Race, the Light Night Glow Run, and the Devonport Christmas Fun Run, just to name a few. We'll see you at the starting line. This week on the pod, I was stoked to sit down with Devonport Footy Club Premiership winning coach Kurt Byard, and he talks about his journey through footy. We talk about coaching and his coaching style, the good and the bad side to it, and also his philosophy on coaching. We talk about injuries that he's had over the journey and how he came back from this, and obviously we have a really good chat about that magic day last year where the club broke its premiership drought, the week and time leading up to the day itself and the challenges that they had in getting over the line. And we also have a good chat about the celebrations afterwards, which is a good yarn as well. Kurt also opens up about how not to drive or light a bonfire, so there's certainly plenty in this one for everyone. I know that you're going to enjoy it. As always, make sure that you like, subscribe, follow, make sure you recommend it to someone else, and thanks for listening.
Welcome back to the Talk Hard Podcast. I'm Jake.
I'm Briley.
I'm Sonny.
We hope you enjoy today's episode.
I've got half an opportunity here. I'm going to take it this time.
He sat there for two songs and he goes, he likes to shut up, and then he left.
When I die, I want everyone to have shots and I want you to use my coffin as the bar.
I collapsed and they couldn't find a heartbeat for a couple of minutes.
I would give everything, anything that I've got right now to hear my mum sing again.
Could just go into the house and do it and no one would care, but people do care.
He said, thank you for saving my life.
The Talk Hard Podcast with Brendan Hinkson.
Oh, mate, it doesn't get much bigger than this.
Kurt Byard, welcome to the Talk Hard Podcast, mate.
Thanks, probably a little bit nervous, but good to be here, though.
Well, you don't look it, mate, so that's good. So yeah. It must be a coaching strategy, just holding the nerves and keeping them down so the people around you are nice and calm.
Yeah, correct, just a poker face.
It comes in handy.
Yeah, it does.
Mate, I'm going to ask you a question straight off the bat because we ask all the hard-hitting questions here, but this is more an OH&S question because I noticed today that you did turn up in a taxi. I was a little bit nervous about you getting here because I've heard that lately driving isn't your forte. So when you turn up in the taxi, I was actually very relieved because I thought this could end in tears. So.
Yeah. The last 3 weeks has been a bit of a challenge. So, use your cup holders is all I'll say on that.
Do you want to quickly tell us what happened? It involved some coffees or something.
Purchased a couple of coffees and decided to leave them in the takeaway cardboard slip rather than put them in the coffee hole or the cup holders in the car. And slipped out and landed on my passenger side seat that had my laptop on it. So I opted to save the laptop and write the car off. So
what was worth more? What sort of car were you driving?
Nissan Navara. So yeah, it wasn't definitely wasn't worth the probably $500-$600 Chromebook that I had. So anyway,
you're still here to tell the tale, mate. That's the main thing.
Yeah, no one was hurt, so that was the main thing. Just
that's good.
Just a copped a bit of pride, dent in the pride, and pretty frustrated myself. But
I reckon.
I
heard it must have played on your mind. Apparently, you didn't play the best game of footy that day either.
No, I was pretty frustrated. Just any little thing sort of took me over the edge, or just gave it. Handballed it to someone else to deal with, so...
Wasn't your best coaching day either, that one?
No, I hit it pretty well, apparently, from the boys, they reckon, so... Yeah, it was only sort of probably a third of them that probably knew that what went on in the morning, but, the rest sort of were none the wiser, which was good,
That's good. Yeah, you don't want any extra distractions going into a game, do you, mate?
No, that's right. I thought I might have copped a bit of flack, but, that was sort of the following week. I copped a few things there and a couple of fines and all the rest of that that comes along with a bit of banter.
Yeah. Well, the next couple of weeks, you might cop a bit of flack, mate. There's millions of people that listen to this podcast, so they'll be all over you.
Yeah, I'll be hiding, hopefully.
You will. Premiership coach, how does that sit with you?
Yeah, I'm super proud of myself on that front. Still, I think it's still a bit surreal. When you look like I'll use like Dale Perry or Ned for the example, like the amount of time he's put in at Devonport prior to his success at the Trobe and not being able to get one. I consider myself pretty lucky, and I've got a great group of players down there. It took us three to get one, so just super pleased for the club and happy for the players and all our supporters and just the community in general to finally land one.
Awesome. And we'll go into the day a little bit later on, but I was going to ask you, does it make it any sweeter being a coach? You've obviously won flags before at La Trobe and things like that as a player. Is it different, or does it make it more rewarding? Or
yeah, I feel like it's more rewarding. Like you put the effort in to try and dot your I's and cross your T's and to finally get that all fall in line with 21 players, or 20 players including myself,
yep.
And then support staff to get everyone on the same page and then fulfil what's required. Really happy that yep. finally come to fruition.
Awesome. And how have you felt like the hunger is amongst the group? Obviously at the moment as we speak, Devonport's sitting top of the table, I think 6-0 at the moment. Did you feel that they've come back in good nick in the right mindset?
Yeah. I mean, a few of the boys had a bit of heartache in the twos, so they're very keen to have another opportunity at the back end of this year, and I'd say they're a fair driving force to driving that hunger for the group. So it's a credit to all those guys that continue to push, and a few of them come back bigger and stronger. A couple of them are playing senior football currently, and
yep.
We've got some juniors that want to play the highest level too, so yep. they've got that drive as well. So the group's going really strong at the moment, which is pleasing.
Yep, and I suppose for the senior group too, if you've got ones coming up from underneath too, it puts a bit of pressure on their positions, which is always a good thing. Performing, don't they?
Yeah, competition for spots is really healthy at the moment, and we're very lucky in that we're in that position, and got to make the most of while we're sitting in the position that we're sitting in.
Absolutely, yeah. Well, they reckon going back to back sometimes is harder than winning the first one, isn't it? Keeping that hunger and
yeah, they do say that. So we're hoping that we can emulate what other clubs have done beforehand, like the Dockers have done. They ran one three in a row. So hopefully we can make hay while the sun shines.
While the sun shines, yeah. Them, so. Yep. Start a bit of a dynasty.
Yeah, that's the plan. So I think we're set up for success for years to come. But the work's still got to go in though.
Yeah, that's right. It's not just going to happen, is it? So obviously we'll talk about your footy career and things like that. But obviously we want to go back to the start as well. So whereabouts did you grow up, mate? Let's go back to your childhood for a beginning.
Yeah. So Sheffield boy, or West Kentish to be specific.
Yep.
So we've got a family farm up that way. At, yep. So brother's got that on hand now, and fourth generation with the farm. So
yep.
Primary school at Sheffield before making the move to St. Brendan's for high school. So catching the bus at Slater's at sort of 7:30 in the morning.
Yep. And the cold winters and the snow and
That. So
harden you up.
Yeah, that's it. So love the farm life. Yep. While we're up there, just that freedom to move around and
yep. So what sort of things did you get up to? Is it just you and Quade, is it, or have you got other siblings?
I've got a sister as well. Yep. So they're the three of us. Dad had a dairy farm for a number of years, and then we transferred over to beef.
Yeah.
My brother still carries on now, so
yep. Did you give your dad any grey hairs growing up on the farm, sort of running amok?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I had a stack in the milking shed one day when I was...
Shit.
Yeah, slipped me head open when I was a young kid and
yeah.
gave mum a bit of a fright. So, they're some of the memories that will hold on for a lifetime.
Yeah, hardened you up for a footy career, mate. Taking a few knocks early.
Yeah, that's right.
So when and where did you get into footy? Because I know that you did little athletics as well when you were young, so you're obviously pretty sporty from an early age.
I've got to thank mum and dad for all the transport and all the rest that they did. But little ass was something we did during was it starting under sixes, I think, something like that. So fall in line with Auskick, Auskick of the winter and athletics of the summer.
Yep.
It was a good hand in hand.
Yep. So Auskick in Devonport, was it? You travelled in for that?
To La Trobe, actually. Okay. So, I started Auskick in La Trobe, and my dad's always been fairly heavily involved in footy, on the junior footy side of things. Yep. So,
his coach, was he? Or?
Yeah, he coached us at times throughout the development. So, he's a pretty big influence on myself.
Yep. Was he a good footballer himself at all? Did he play? Or?
Yeah, he played at a bit of mixture at Sprayton and Sheffield. So,
yep.
He's... Played a number of games, bit of a backman, snuck a few goals here and there.
Yep. What sort of player was he? Was he hard?
Oh.
Did you watch much of him?
Yeah, it's hard to sort of think so far back to sort of the style now, think of how I critique players now.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I think from memory he was pretty fair, and just sort of your run of the mill players, probably pretty similar to myself, really.
Yep. And so obviously you got into footy at an early age, and then you progressed through the junior ranks at La Trobe. You always stayed with La Trobe in the early days?
Yeah, so went through Auskick and then all the way through the junior side of things, and then made a change to Devonport when the TCL come back in 2009.
Yep, yep.
Yeah.
And you got a bit of early success, I believe. It was under 17s and under 19 premierships at La Trobe early days.
Yeah, I mean, that's sort of about the year when, or sort of around those years when they started that sort of under 17 comp back up, I think around 05, 06, somewhere around that
yep.
time frame.
Yep.
Yeah, and we had some good young players, and probably led into that success that La Trobe had over those years that followed as well. So lucky enough to probably be a bit of an early bloomer back in the day. So
yep. So what did you sort of learn anything at those early days playing in grand finals? Can you sort of remember what your feeling was going into them? Obviously, you've played in a few now. Do you ever look back on those early days?
Yeah, probably. I remember the under-19 flag. I'd only played minimal games most of the year in the under-17s.
Yep.
But got a bit of a crack late because the season finished early for the under-17s, and Shane Keat was coach. Go put some faith in me and gave me a bit of a crack, and he obviously had some hard decisions to make, and I was playing some good footy, and yeah, lucky enough he went with me. And
yep.
But yeah, remember being pretty nervous grand final day, but yeah, like most games, once you get into the game and get your first knock or touch, sort of those nerves disappear.
Yeah, sometimes getting belted or tackled early can just calm the nerves as well, can't it? Just yeah, get involved in it.
It can just get settles out and lets all those nerves disappear, which
absolutely.
Is good.
So 2008, I think you played your first senior game. So you were sort of playing a few reserves games up until then, were you? Or?
No, I'd been playing I think I just got picked up straight from the start.
Okay.
So Dumpy Langway or Matthew Langway was the coach, and
yep.
I must have played okay in the preseason or done enough training, and yeah, got a first game against Devonport.
Yep. Ironically.
Which is ironic, yeah.
Yep.
So, my assistant now is Clint Matthews, and he was playing that day. And,
yep. Give you a clip around the ear roll, did he?
No, I don't remember so much. I don't remember lots about the first game. I vaguely remember that I was doing a bit of a tagging role, I'm pretty sure, with another player on a snapper, Kurt Hosewood.
Oh,
so,
yeah? You would have learned a fair bit that day.
Yeah, fair to say I did a lot of running around, so I don't think I touched the footy much.
I was going to say, did you give him a bath? That'd be easy to do.
No, I think there was two of us trying to stop him, and I don't think we had any luck.
I reckon it'd take two. Yeah, he was a fair old player. Yeah,
yeah, my word.
Yeah. So I was going to ask you about that. So your early days and your junior days, I know that you're obviously a defender now, and I always remember your playing in defence, but were you playing sort of a bit of midfield as well, were you, in those days?
Yes, probably a bit of mid and forward as well, so I probably did that up until probably 2015 when I finished at the Trobe, and then the transition across to Devonport.
Yep.
Probably pushed myself back a little bit.
Yep.
Since going there.
Yep.
But yeah, sort of been a bit flexible to play both ends, pretty lucky to be able to do that.
Which you got
to
be in the modern game, don't you?
Yeah,
you
do.
Play everywhere.
Yeah, and it's probably just around where our team makeups where that sort of landed as well. So,
yeah, yep.
But don't mind kicking a snag though when that opportunity presents.
Absolutely, yeah, it's only natural, mate. You wouldn't be the first.
Hmm.
You said in 2009, then you went over to Devonport. So, what was the thinking behind that? Was it just trying at the higher level? Was it, or did they sort of come chasing you or anything like that? Or
Definitely wanted to play at the highest level, and
yep.
I'm pretty sure, Dumpy was a fair. Support for that. Obviously, he'd been at Devonport previously and he's played some pretty good football himself. So, yeah, I'd suggest that just a bit of guidance around wanting to play that highest level, and had the support of the Trobe players then to say, hey, yeah, go see how you go, mate.
Like, yep.
We're not going anywhere. So.
Yeah. Was there any others that came over with you, or was it just you that went over in that time?
No, I don't think so. One of my good mates, Matty Sheen, tried to come across, but we sort of didn't land in the same club for a couple of years. We end up in different spots. So
yeah,
but just went and had a crack and just sort of thought, well, if it falls through, it falls through, and
you can only have a go at it.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, how did you find it, the step up?
Yeah, I mean, it was a good learning experience. obviously a little bit faster than probably what local footy is, yep. A little bit cleaner, but you've got to put that little bit extra work in as well.
Yep. Did you, were you playing seniors or was it a few reserves games as well? Or?
A bit of a mixture for the year, so I think I probably played 8 or 9 sort of senior games and probably pretty similar in the reserves, yep. Side of things.
Yep. And it was only the 1 year that you spent over there, is that right?
Yeah, just the one. Yeah, things sort of didn't align for me. Started the 2010 season.
Yep.
Didn't like how things were sitting, so went back out to Latrobe and I took a gap year that year, so footy wasn't a big... I mean, I still love footy, but yeah, I knew I'd only have probably half a dozen games, so I thought, well, a lot of my mates are still out there, so I'll go and play with them for the 6 or so games before I moved off.
Yep. So then you were back to Latrobe to 2010. Obviously, you came back at the start of that really successful era that they started to have. Did you notice any differences from, obviously you'd only been away for 12 months, but was there any significant differences that you noticed, apart from Ned Perry obviously being the coach? Was there anything else about the club that you...
Not that stands out, I mean...
Could you sense that they were going to have a good run?
Or? Oh, it's just that, I mean, Ned's obviously one of the best coaches that's been around local footy, and he's very knowledgeable and... just that change, potential change in direction and drive from the playing group to probably that realisation that they could have something special from there, and just that little extra bit of work. And yeah, sometimes all it takes is a few stars to align and away you go.
Mm. What makes him a good coach, do you think?
He sells a really good story.
Yep.
He's knowledgeable around how players best learn and position-wise, where they're probably best suited.
Yep.
He great with feedback, which you need to be as a coach, and he sees the big picture.
And you obviously played in reserves and senior premierships through that time. What were your memories of those days?
They were good fun. So 2011, obviously the club was strong again and was pushing for that second senior flag, and I got injured just before finals, so that sort of stuffed me up there
a little bit.
So, but yep. Got to play in the reserves, and it was one of the. I mean, finals present a weird day, and I think we had a really good first half or first quarter that sort of just put the game to bed straight away.
Yeah, right. It was over nice and early.
Yeah, and early. So we're able to enjoy the rest of the day. I think we actually got outscored in the last quarter quite substantially, but all that far up, we're sort of probably celebrating already.
It was party time.
Yeah. But 2012, we lost to Wynyard, so that was pretty bitter.
Yep. Was that seniors or reserves?
Seniors, yeah. Yep. So was obviously hadn't quite got that success like the rest of the guys had. So I was telling about our sort of situation some of our boys are in at the moment. That's probably what I was like back then. And
yep.
Then 2013, we finally landed one and we had a bit of an anomaly year where we went through undefeated. So
yep.
I mean, a couple of really close games throughout that year to keep that way, but to be able to be a contributor in that year. But we had a very good side, under no illusions of that, but yep. Happy that I could play my role within the side as well.
Yep. And you found, though, that missing out in 2012 or losing the game, did that sort of drive you in 2013?
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, had some good conversations around Ned around end of year reviews around some things I needed to work on. And
yep. What did he point out to you? What did he think that you need to work on?
Oh, just around some urgency when receiving the footy, and just around some decisional making things that probably away from footy, just around health and what I eat and all those types of nutritional based things that
yep.
probably, yeah, I did a little bit, but just not to the level that I needed to.
Yep.
I mean, I'm always liked a social side of things, so just in making sure I had a good balance of the social side and then actually having some application as well.
Yep. So he sort of had that holistic approach to a footballer as well. He wasn't just worried about what you were doing on a Saturday. He was sort of talking to you about what you were doing away from the game as well.
Yeah, 100%.
Yep. And so do you sort of take that in when you're talking to your players? Do you look at what they're doing outside of footy?
Or? Yeah, definitely. I mean, I try and use all my previous coaches as to impart something that they've done for me to the players that I've got now. So
yep.
Try and deliver that holistic approach. You're not just coaching the player, but you're coaching the person. So
yep.
People first is a a big driver.
Yep. Do you find these days with the modern footballers, though, they are sort of paying a bit more attention to what they're doing outside of the game?
Yes and no. I mean, we've got some guys that definitely hold some high standards down at the footy club at the moment from the TCL days, so we've been very lucky in that, and it's been good guidance for some of our young players coming through, doing additional gym sessions and running and all those types of things, which obviously puts the team in a really good position.
Yep.
We're making the most of that for sure.
Yep. And so after 2013, you went out to Hillwood and had a year out there. How did that come about? Because that's sort of a bit of an off-the-beaten-track for you, so to speak, isn't it?
Yeah, it was a little bit different. So 2013, I was pretty lucky to get involved with the Tassie Amateur Under-23 side. Yep. So,
which you were captain of, I think, from memory, is that right?
Yeah, so lucky enough to get the captaincy. And one of the assistant coaches for the side was Max Pearce, who was coaching Hillwood.
Right, yep.
And pretty good mates with his son, and who was playing on the side also, and happened to be fourth year of uni. Those, like I said before, the stars are aligning. That sort of aligned really well, and I thought, well, if I'm going to play with these guys, like I said, I had been for probably 2 or 3 years, this is the year, final year to do it. And we snuck out to Hillwood and had a bit of fun out there together, which was good.
So you were going to uni up in Launceston as well?
Yeah, right? So stayed up in Lonnie for a couple of years and then travelled to Hillwood.
Yeah,
which was 20 minutes out of town, wasn't too far, but it was good to have a bit of a laugh with the boys and social side of things was really strong.
Yep. What sort of side did you have? Did you have any success that year?
Oh, we should have done. We
did you have too much fun off the field?
Oh, we definitely had fun. Like looking back on it, we would have had a half a dozen to 10 players that were capable of playing at North Lonnie and have played at North Lonnie since.
Yeah, right. Yep.
We had a bit of arch nemesis with Bridge North through the year, and we knocked them off in the must have been one of the semis or the qualifying or something like that. We had a Bettermore year, and we sort of the only team was going to give South a bit of a shake.
Yeah.
We had to get over Deloraine in the prelim the following week to take them on, and we got a bit of ahead of ourselves and went down by about 9 points or something like that, which was a bit disappointing.
Yeah.
But that's footy for you.
Yeah.
You got to take it 1 week at a time. And
that's right. It's a common story, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. So, a little bit, we're all pretty bitter on it that we didn't take that opportunity when it was there. But, that's why you got to have everyone buying in and follow the sell for the year and keep moving forward.
Absolutely. I was going to ask you, so obviously you were at La Trobe for 2013 and then you went to Hillwood. Did you have to speak to Ned or speak to the club about going to Hillwood? How did that go down?
I'm pretty sure I caught up with Coffee for Ned to break the news to him.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously he was a bit disappointed to see me moving on, but he understood the reasons why, and when you have those conversations, when you're honest, even though you got to sometimes say things you don't want to hear, they're the best conversations, and it leaves everyone feeling nice and positive and supportive of each other. And obviously once the year finished, was straight back there. So
yeah, that's what I was going to say. Did you tell him at that time that you were most likely going to be coming back? Was
yeah,
one year away.
Yeah, just the 1 year away. And I mean, I really enjoyed my time out at the Trobe and had got some really good memories from out there.
Yep. How do you find sort of going, I know the level was probably still pretty strong there, but I'd imagine it was probably just slightly less than the NTFL at the time. How do you find going back out to country footy, playing it after having played at a higher level? Did it come easier to you? Do you think it helped your development? What's the theory behind it?
I'd say they're not too dissimilar, the levels.
Okay, yep.
Just the array of playing surfaces that you're probably playing, a little bit different conditions here and there.
Yep. I mean, curators don't put as much time in.
just the locations. I mean, like Hillwood down on the waterfront, out off the beaten track a little bit.
Yep.
And then next thing you're up at Youngtown in Lonnie, or you might be at Longford, so just a few different sort of regional sort of areas. So obviously hard to upkeep at times, but the footy was, it was still a pretty good level, I thought, and contested.
Yeah.
Up here, I think the difference is probably, or had been previously, just around sort of disposal and that type of thing, probably a little bit cleaner footy up this way.
Yep.
Compared to the physical nature down that way.
Yep. So did you find it a little bit tricky to get used to it to start off with?
No, not too bad.
Yep.
Played as a defender down there, and
yep.
yeah, I mean, I enjoy the physical contest of things. Too much running, obviously, yeah, doesn't play in my hands as strong as what it
suits your game.
Yeah, it suits my style. So, yeah, I didn't mind the physicality side of things. So, yeah, cool. It was good.
So, back to La Trobe then in 2015. So, that was about the time, though, you got you had a bout of osteitis pubis. Is that right? Your first year back?
Yeah, a bit of an interrupted season.
Yep.
Still managed to a dozen odd games for the year.
Yep.
But yeah, just that sort of was more of a management year, trying to get through. And but yeah, it was the in thing sort of around those few years. Osteitis pubis was a bit of a...
It was funny because, yeah, it just seemed to come up all the time, but now you don't really hear of it much. Can you explain to people, like, what it is? Like, people have obviously heard of it, but...
Yeah, it was more just, like, have a consistent sort of dull ache in the groins.
Yep.
Just sort of any lateral movement was, just minor pain, just consistently.
Yep.
So it just sort of forever felt like you're playing with some sort of niggle.
Yep. Do they know what causes it?
Yeah, I was due with the pubic... front of the pelvis in the pubic bone there, just with impact. So when they do it, they try and get you to stay away from sort of running on hard surfaces and change up sort of your training style, and try and suggest swimming is a really good thing.
Yep.
To do. Probably one I probably should have entered in a little bit more than what I did.
Yep.
But for the players that had it, yeah, it's definitely, it's just a more really uncomfortable and prolonged sort of injury. It's not like an ankle or something you get over and sort of, well, I mean, ankle's probably a bad example, but 4 or 6 weeks and you should hopefully pass it with a bit of strapping and
yep,
mobility sort of stuff, you should be okay. But yeah, that sort of just seemed to linger throughout. It'd go in ebbs and flows. If the ground was heavy, you'd feel it more.
Yep.
If it was dry, it wasn't too bad.
Yep.
But yeah, obviously being a winter sport, some weeks are worse than others.
It's going to be heavy a lot, isn't it?
Mm.
Yeah. So it's something that you can play with, but it's uncomfortable.
Yeah,
it?
It's just a little bit limiting.
Yep.
Just sort of lose a bit of power and speed. So, I mean, I know there's a few other local players that have dealt with it through their time.
Yep.
Even some really successful players. So, yeah, the ability to be able to hide it. I know I had some prescription anti-inflammatories that sort of helped throughout that season.
Yep.
To get through a bit of that last sort of habit of the morning of and get you through the game, and then post game you'd be feel like you're in need of walking frame or something like that. But yep.
Didn't pull up so well.
No, but yep. I'm sure there's lots of stories like that are around though. But yep. Yeah.
So
when you love footy, you want to play and do everything you can playing. To play.
Exactly, yeah. So did you have like a prolonged period out though? Like you had a long time where you didn't actually play?
So I had 2016 off.
Yep.
So after discussions with the sports therapist about maybe having a bit of time off, it might be enough to just settle it down, and yeah, had a crack at having a year off, and that's sort of where the coaching sort of side of things kicked off.
Yep.
Having that year off in 2016, and
yep.
I'd done a little bit of coaching with the juniors at La Trobe with under-17s, and
yep. How did that come about? Was that something that was always on the radar? Did you want to get into coaching, or was it more that you couldn't play so you wanted to stay involved in a way? Or?
Oh, typically, I mean, most football clubs like to try and get a young player that's close to that sort of age bracket to coach sort of young boys to create that stronger link. I happen to be playing some reasonable football, so that sort of allows them to sort of see, well, I'm not that much older than you guys, and this is what you can be if you put your mind to it, sort of thing, and let you be relatable to them, and they're not someone that's old and cranky and barking at them. So
yep.
Yeah, there's some obviously learned a lot along the way.
Yeah, I was going to ask you that. So what do you look back on anything that you used to do back then that you just sort of cringe at now that you obviously know a lot more about coaching?
I used to pin the boys pretty hard, like for non-communication. Yep. So if there was players that didn't turn up, the ones that were at training copped a flogging. So that's probably something I've learnt not to do. The ones that turn up are the ones that are doing the right thing.
Yeah,
so,
you'd punish the group for the few that weren't doing the right thing.
Yeah. So it was that was probably one big learning that I took from the way.
Yeah.
But yeah, the power of friendships when kids are playing with themselves, they soon got them all there, which was the main aim of it. So yep. It worked, but yep. In hindsight, probably a bit probably could have been other ways to get it done, but yeah. It got the desired result, though, yep. So can't be too disheartened.
You got to start somewhere, though, don't you?
Yeah, you do.
Yeah. Did you have much success back then with the under-17s? How did they go?
Yeah, they did okay. We definitely won some games. I don't think we made it to the last day, but we definitely played finals for both of those years, I'm pretty sure. But yeah, yep. Just didn't quite have the cattle to go all the way, but couldn't discourage their endeavour and Billy to listen and learn.
Yep.
As young kids, and yeah, it's good to see a few of them still stick around playing some local footy as well.
Yep. And did that time sort of stir anything up in you for coaching, or was it just something that you were sort of doing? You were still focused on being more of a player. Is it?
I definitely like seeing the growth. I mean, you had some players that probably hadn't played much footy before, and to be able to see them come in leaps and bounds and improve from week to week or from training session to training session, just fills you with excitement to sort of see, well, where can they get to and what can they achieve?
Mm. Yeah, you take a bit of satisfaction in seeing that growth, don't you?
Yeah, you do.
Yeah.
I mean, I'll use Evan Lockwood as an example, as one of our current players at the footy club. He's played all six games so far this year, and it's probably his fourth year of footy, so he's still pretty raw, but he's eager and keen to learn. So,
yep.
When you see those types of things, like even about experience now as a senior coach is awesome.
Yep, you take satisfaction in it yourself. Just going back to your osteitis pubis, can you explain like your mindset? Obviously, it's a bit of a frustrating sort of time, and coming off the back of playing some good football as well. Was there sort of times when it was really tough for you, or did you always know that you were going to get back eventually? Or
highly frustrating, like as most injured players would tell you, when especially when it's something that's probably, I don't know, you still walk around, you can still do everything, so it wasn't like you're perceived to have like a knee or
yep.
or something that's very obvious as an injury. So very frustrated when some weeks you'd pull up really sore and next week you didn't play. So I mean, I did a lot of boxing and stuff like that.
Yep.
With Nobby Broomhall.
Yep.
So we would. That gave me some level of ability to get some frustration out, which was nice. But, yeah, to be able to sit there and watch guys when they're training or Saturday, yeah, highly frustrating. And, there's heaps of people that have been in that position where you just feel like, well, do I bother? Do I keep going? Or I just throw the towel in? Or so you've got to be pretty resilient.
Mm.
So I've been lucky to... It probably wasn't as serious as some other guys have had, or the amount of injuries other guys have had. So,
yep.
Touch wood, that's the main sort of, well, the only sort of stuff I have. I'm getting to the back end of the career now. But
you've been pretty lucky with injury, though, apart from that, haven't you?
Yeah, I have. I've been very lucky. So, I've had a few knocks here and there, and a few fingers go out of place. But, they've gone back in and they're still working, so I can't complain too much.
Nothing too major.
Yeah.
So just having that year off, that was the key to fixing the osteitis, was it? That was the...
Yeah, it was good just a refresher, and blew out a fair bit.
Yep. As you can imagine, living the good life.
Yeah, blew out quite a bit, but gave me a bit of a road back.
Yep.
But got there eventually, which was the main thing. Yep. But all part of the challenge that... When you do have time away from footy to get back.
It's when your discipline really kicks in, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does, and probably just proves how easy it is for the average person who doesn't play sport, the importance of eating healthy and looking after yourself with doing some level of exercise that suits you, suits the individual.
Mm. How scary is it in this day and age how much we rely on modern technology? It's not till your phone dies or the Wi-Fi or power goes off that you realise you'd be lost without it. Well, recently, my phone decided in its old age to die and stop charging, and on a weekend, no less. So what do? Rather than waiting to speak to the network providers or retail outlets, which can be painful within itself, give Brad or Katie a call at Greenies Apple Repairs. That's what I did, and they had my old phone as good as new in hours. Greenies take care of iPhones, iPods, iPads, and pretty much everything else, and they won't cost you an arm and a leg. So next time you're stuck back in the dark ages with no technology, contact Greenies Apple Repairs on 0401... 229-220, or you can contact them at www.greeniesrepairs.com.au or find them on Facebook. Now just to get onto this busted screen. So you said then at, in 2016, that's when you got back into coaching over at Devonport. Why did you end up going to coaching at Devonport? There was nothing at La Trobe available to you, or you wanted to make a clean break, did you? Or?
I actually got approached by Mitch Thorpe, who was the TSL coach. So he was after some support staff, and had a bit of a meeting with him, and I thought, well, why not go learn from him? He'd been in the system, AFL system, and played some high level footy, so he'd been successful at other TSL clubs. So I thought, well, why not go and try and learn a little bit more while I can?
Yep. And so what did you find sort of drew him to you? Was it your previous coaching experience, or did he know that you wanted to get into it? Or
I just think he'd seen me sort of locally, obviously, with some juniors, and had a bit of a young side at Devonport as well back then. So I think just sort of was lucked out, and he was just trying to sort of say, you know, you knew I was an educator as well and resourceful up with being up with some Brendan, so should we needed the gym and that type of thing. So he just did some smart homework, I think, and just posed the question, and I jumped at the opportunity.
Yep. And how did you find working with Mitch Thorpe? Because I know, you know, different people have got lots of different stories about him. He was pretty ruthless at times. How did you find him as a coach?
Oh, he's definitely ruthless, but he's very knowledgeable too. So, I enjoyed my time with Mitch. We still touch base from time to time.
Yep. He's just recently won another flag, I think, with Launceston.
And he's got them going great guns.
Yep.
I mean, when you've got 100-odd players on the track, like, it's insane numbers. So, so for him to be able to continue to have that success across a period of years, so obviously speaks to his footy nous and knowledge. It was good to learn from him, and I think he's one of few that either has his level 3 or he's, you know, I'm pretty sure he does. He's run the course shortly, so to learn from him was obviously a good time.
Yep. What were his main strengths as a coach, would you say?
Oh, he was very smart strategically.
Yep.
And knew how to sort of change the style of the game or the tempo of the game by making moves and when to make moves. He demanded from his players what he wanted, and most of the time he got that.
Yeah. It was quite interesting just, obviously being around footy and that sort of listening to him as well, because he sort of had a lot of the old school about him, I suppose, whereas today, I suppose, coaching's a little bit different. I know just recently David Noble from North Melbourne actually apologised to his players because he went too hard at them for giving them a spray. I can't imagine Mitch Thorpe doing that. He seemed to be the bit of the fire and brimstone type stuff. He used to sort of get into them, wasn't scared to, you know, shake the walls every now and again.
Oh, yeah. Let me talk about Noble, for example. Like, I don't think there's anything wrong with honesty. And at the end of the day, I think the players know that the coach is there to get the best out of them. And when things aren't going right, you've got to question why. And sometimes honest truths are how to get there the quickest to get the response. But every player is different. Not every player responds in that way.
Yeah.
As a coach, you've got to find out who does respond and how do you get the response from the others who don't take to the old school ways.
You've got to learn. You can't sort of treat everyone the same way, can you? You've got to treat everyone as an individual.
That's exactly right.
So you were back playing in 2017.
So I had a crack trying to play state league again. And,
yep. And that was a pretty tough time though for the club, was it?
We were very young.
Yep.
But the group was eager to learn, and we had some kids come from Ulverston and the Trobe, locally to bring the stocks up, and they got in, had a crack, and with myself being there, obviously me being one a little bit older than some of those guys, try to obviously impart some level of experience on them like other guys do to me. Going through.
Yep. So the next year, so obviously Devonport went back to the NWFL in 2018. That's when you became head coach. Can you tell us about that time, how you sort of transitioned into being head coach? Because you were, there was two coaches there at one stage, wasn't there? Is that right?
Yeah. So 2018 was a bit of a funny year. Obviously they had the TSL, trying to go again with the TSL side. Got to a point where I had to make a call that we probably weren't going to get the numbers. So Simon Dent was in line to coach them, and I was going to be coaching the local side, the NWFL side.
Yep.
So once that sort of fell over, I thought, well, we've both been doing a fair bit of work together, and we worked well together. Why not do the job together? So, yeah, Denty was jumped on board, which I was grateful for, and we're able to bounce ideas off each other, and yeah, it made for a good year, and the strong foundations that we still carry through to today.
Yep. So it was the next year after that, was it 2019, that you took over solely, was that right?
Yeah, so I took over solely, and we had a big recruitment drive of getting lots of previous players back to the club.
Yep.
A few needed some time away, and ones that persisted stuck on, and some that had been elsewhere or abroad, or Launceston, for example, like trying to get them back into the fold. So we had to put a bit of work in to get them back, and yeah, they started rolling through the gates, which was awesome.
Yep, excellent. So obviously just a little bit about coaching with you. How do you find the pressure of being a coach and being a playing coach at the same time? Do you find that there's extra pressure when you're actually out there on the field as well, or is it trickier for you being out there?
It just stresses the importance of having really good support staff, and I've had that throughout, well, from 2019 throughout. So, I mean, I've had Wade Simmons, who's out at fourth, coaching fourth. Bo Sharman, who's coaching Winion. Yep. And Bo was playing with me as well. Then I've had Clint Matthews and Dwayne O'Hearn, Dipper. So they've both been, all of them have been really influential for me and helping me out and to get things done.
Yep.
Then, yeah, you throw the likes of, we had Shane Keep last year, who was in there helping out here and there, Ross Harris, so some good knowledgeable blokes that sort of pitched in when we needed them to.
Yep. And what sort of structure is it? Do you try to make changes from out on the field, or you just give them free rein to do whatever they want from the bench, or...?
Yeah, they definitely have some free rein.
Yep.
I mean, I've stressed about our side about being a flexible side, and my given chess pieces of that can play in multiple roles allows them to make changes during the game. If I don't really like someone, I'll be hollering from out in field and get the runner out, and
yep.
Or I'll get myself off something I'm really strongly about.
Yep.
But yeah, definitely give them the responsibility to drive things based on discussions during the week.
Yep. This is probably a tricky question for you. What kind of coach are you? If we asked some of your players, if we surveyed them, what do you reckon would be a few of the words they'd come up with?
They'd tell you I'm pretty intense with my eyes.
You stare a hole through them, do you?
Yeah, they reckon I'll get crazy eyes. But yeah, I think I'm fair, and I have fair expectations.
Yep.
Of players, I know what it takes for the players to do it by doing it myself. So whatever I put them through, I've got to do it myself. So I think they see that side of things. I'm a pretty good communicator as well, and have strong relationships. So they're probably the strong points at the top.
Yep.
That probably sets or gives me a good foundation to coach.
Yep. You talked about honest feedback there before. Have you ever had to give someone or give the team a good bake?
Yeah, giving them a bake here and there.
Yeah, how does that go? Is that something that comes naturally to you?
No, probably not. I mean, I'm pretty easygoing and sort of type of character, and I'm pretty patient as well. So, yeah, I've probably had to pull the trigger on those sort of bakes a few times to get the response rather than having to wait. So, I mean, I'm pretty competitive. Whether it's footy or playing a game of cards, it doesn't really matter.
You want to win.
I want to win, yeah. So, as my wife would tell you, so.
Yep.
I've given a couple, but, yeah, keep them to a low number, because when you do give them, it has more of an impact.
Then. Yeah, they reckon. I don't know whether, I think it was Lee Matthews or someone said, you've only got sort of five or six really good ones that you can give after that. The message is lost if you're giving them all the time. You've really got to sort of shock them from time to time with it.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So, yeah. Yeah, every now and then they do cop one and a few finger pointing and
yep.
Pokes in the chest, that type of stuff. But, yep.
I was only thought of this one the other night, but I know that there's certain players, particularly in AFL, that I've heard about that you don't have to coach so much. You just let them go out there and let them play. Do you sort of have that philosophy with some players need to be coached more than others, whereas others that you can just put them out there and just let them do their thing?
Oh, definitely. And it comes down to experience.
Yep.
Obviously, the more experienced players, you're not giving them as much feedback as some of those sort of first gamers or the potentially fringe players or players who are playing a tough role that you've got to give more feedback during games or in post-game reviews with them. So, it just sort of depends on the player and the role that they're playing. And I I'll use Caleb Van Buren as an example. Like he's a pretty good judge of how he's going of himself from week to week and how things are tracking, and if he's got some challenges, he's generally pretty... I mean, he's just one example. There's plenty of others that are in the side that have that same sort of mentality.
Yep. Do you have any stories about players that you've coached that... I don't say, like, difficult, because I know you enjoy coaching all of your players, but you've had some difficulties with, or you've had to work through certain challenges? I know you spoke about Lockwood there before, but has there been anyone else that... It's been a bit of a tricky road, but then you've seen them come out the other side and taken... great satisfaction in that.
Definitely some guys that have faced being dropped throughout the year or towards the back end of the year and really fight tooth and nail to get back into the side for finals and to see them respond. I mean, it's never easy telling them they've got to go back to the twos, but it's part of the job description. So you got to paint a picture and say, hey, this is what you got to work on, this is what we're missing or lacking. If you've got them, they'll respond, and when they bounce back, that's the pleasing side.
Yep. Do you find that they generally know before you tell them though what's coming, or sometimes do they disagree or they're surprised by the feedback?
Sometimes there's elements that they disagree with, but obviously I think there's also part of them that is more frustrated with themselves, that's where it's got to.
Yep.
And I reckon there's some level of internal notion that something might be coming. Everyone's pretty hard on themselves generally, but if you've got someone who's pretty bit of a realist that you deal with, obviously most people have an idea where they sit as well in the pecking order of things.
Yep. And how do you deal, you were talking about there before about your coaching style, how do you deal with so many different personalities? Is it something that you take the time to get to know them all on an individual level, or do you have any sort of strategies about working with, 40 players basically, haven't you?
Yeah, you just got to be present with them and have meaningful conversation. You don't have lots of time being community level football, so you've got to make the time when you've got it, and when opportunities present to have a bit of fun and we'll blow some steam off, you've got to take those opportunities to make those bonds that little bit stronger. And whether that's during the season or in the off season, you've got to, as I said, whether it's a game of golf, a beer, out for tea, a coffee, the importance of those relationships are key.
Yep. And do you find that there's some players that you do get closer to than others?
Yeah, definitely. There's definitely always players you have a more of affinity with that you might do some of those things more. At the moment, we've got a really strong list and an environment where we've got, whether it's an under-18 player or one of the older senior players, the banter that some of them have with each other at training or during Thursday night tees or game day or whatever, or through some of our social media things is fantastic. So when you see that communication between players, I think that's it's something I feel proud of when you see that you've created an environment that players do feel comfortable when they spend the time away from home or families or job. You got to make sure that they are enjoying their time.
Yeah, well, it starts at the top, doesn't it? You got to set the example and create that environment for them to do it, don't you?
Yeah, you do.
Yeah. Now, you've got another sibling that plays for Devonport that we've touched on a couple of times. How do you go with coaching your brother? Because that's something unusual within itself.
Yeah, definitely.
Is it easier to give him a bake than anyone else?
Or? Yeah, I've probably given him a few bakes. So he's probably one I probably could have thrown up there. But that's always the way. You're always harder on your siblings than probably most others. So I mean, he's a fantastic leader of our footy club, and I mean, obviously, I'm pretty jealous. He got all the attributes, and he's a very handy player.
You got all the coaching now.
Yeah, I'll claim that for sure. But yeah, to be able to play and coach my brother's obviously something that's a little bit different to most circumstances. But yeah, I love doing that every week and being able to spend that time with him. Don't have to make time because we've both got the same common interest and goal, and makes catching up with him and spending time with him, yeah, so much easier.
Yep. Did you have to talk to him before you took up the role at Devonport, that he was going to be okay with it, or did you just say, well, stuff you, I'm going to do it anyway?
Yeah, more the stuff you, I'm taking it anyway sort of right thing. So
how much of your time does coaching take up? I know we were talking before about your work coaching type balance, because you've obviously got a day job as well. Does it really consume a lot of your time?
Yeah, it's more around the communication side of things, and yep, talking, conversations, being on the phone, the planning of training, then you've got the training itself, then game day. So yeah, the hours definitely add up. When you're having conversations, it doesn't take much to get off different tangents, and what your initial phone call might be to a 5-minute phone call turns into a 15-minute phone call, and but that's just the way that coaching goes, and it probably tips into some of those other responsibilities as a coach, checking in and becoming more the person rather than the player as well.
Yep, just checking in with them, making sure that they know that you care about them, I suppose.
Yeah, and just asking how their day's gone and what they've been doing, what are their plans going forward, and
yep,
any difficulties or challenges they might be having personally.
Yep.
Yeah, sometimes you got to work through some of those things with them.
Yep. Do you find that you have to sacrifice much to be a senior coach?
Definitely time with Bronte, who's my wife, so obviously drives her crazy at times. Yep. The time when, especially when footy season comes around, we can't go anywhere, pre-season as well to a degree, because that's generally the busiest time as well. So ability to get away and have our little trips and stuff like that, we've got to be pretty targeted when that happens.
Plan ahead.
Yeah, to planning ahead is really important, but to make time, so the time we do have when we get a bye or something like that, got to make sure that I make the most of it, and
yep,
give a little bit back to give me some brownie points moving forward.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, you need a lot of support from home, don't you?
Yeah, you do, and yeah, she's a great support of mine, and can't thank her enough for everything she does.
Yep, awesome. Well, she'll be listening to this, mate, so yeah, you'll get some brownie points for this, that's for sure. What would you say is the best and the worst part of being a coach?
Best parts is definitely seeing the growth of any player.
Yep.
And obviously if you're having success on top of that as well, that just makes things that little bit sweeter. And that's something we finally had last year. But prior to that, just seeing the success and the change in players' attitudes and drive to want to be better is obviously something that I really like seeing.
Yep.
The worst thing, not being able to control things. As a coach, you want to be able to control as much things as you want, but
yep,
each player lives different individual lives, so sometimes you've just got to suck up the circumstances or the situation. As I said before, you have the honest conversation with them or whatever that might be, that's probably the one that is the hardest thing, when you want to try and control as many factors as you can, but a lot of the time you can't, so you've got to deal with what you've got in front of you.
Yep. So you mean sort of a lot of that sort of out of the game type stuff, like what they're doing in their own...
Yeah, whether that might be work, they want to go traveling or whatever the situation might be. I find that being the worst part. And probably align with probably the pre-season side of things as well, when you're trying to get players to recommit and go again for the next season and
yep,
that type of thing. But yeah, that's probably the worst part of coaching.
Yep.
As probably others would tell you as well.
Yep.
That selling idea of the next season and the things you got to work through, it's part and parcel of the job.
Yep. So you play a pretty active role, do you, in the off season then, on getting players to come back and then recruiting new players and stuff?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. So with the support staff and myself, we sort of, or the leadership group, we've got to work through that to make that happen. And yeah, it's important that you look after your own first, and then yeah, you go and shop if you need to go and shop elsewhere.
Yep. So if there's a certain type of player you think you're going to need moving forward.
Yeah, yeah. Yep. So you don't obviously go and speak to everyone, but yeah, if you identify in sort of the season review what you might need, you go and explore some opportunities, and sometimes they work, other times they don't.
Yep.
So sometimes you run into a dead end and you waste a bit of time, but
yep.
You never know if you don't ask the question.
Just got to make the call, yeah.
Yeah.
How are clubs these days? I know it's a different world now. Like, again, I always reflect on the AFL because you go straight to the top to set the example. But obviously with free agency now, it's quite common for players to be changing clubs and things like that. Whereas, you know, years ago it probably would have been frowned on for players, for, you know, teams to be chasing players from other teams and things like that. But I'm assuming you have to cope with that too. You know, you're not naive enough to think that your players aren't getting phone calls from other clubs. And
No, and we've got players that have been like approached from TSL clubs. So and we had like Callum Stevenson's down at North Hobart playing this year. So yeah, all you can ask of your players to be honest with you and where they're at. And I mean, that example there, if they want to go play a higher level footy, you support them every way in going to do that.
Yep.
At the end of the day, they know where home is, and if you give them the confidence to go and have a crack, well, you never know where that would take them.
Yep. Do you find that any other clubs do get narky if you speak to their players at all? Or?
Oh, you've got to go through the right channel, so you've got to give notice that you are talking to them.
Okay.
There's
a certain protocol.
There's protocols you've got to follow. When it comes to sort of in-season, players are weighted through a point system, so each team, when they put their team selection through, you've got to come under the cap.
Yep.
So yeah, it definitely makes you target who you go for, and hence the importance of 2019 when we were coming back in getting previous Devonport players, because yeah, they're not worth the points, so we need them back in our side to build depth and build a competitive side.
Yeah. How do you find the point system?
It's definitely challenging.
Yep. I'm assuming that's just to create equality across the
board. Yeah, it does. So it creates equality. It can be a funny one. Probably should be more black and white than what it is, but I think we're better with it than without it. So,
yep.
Like, nothing's perfect, so you just got to roll with the punches and what it dishes up you work with.
Yep. The club hadn't... I just want to talk to you a little bit about the pressure of expectation for a start. So the club hadn't won a flag for so long, and I'm assuming that you felt a lot of that pressure as a coach. Like, you might not have done, but I'll ask in a second. But I just went through just my knowledge and the research that I found. So in 1988, they won the TSL flag.
Yep.
And then they made the grand final in 2004, 2005, 2006 and won successful. Then they played off in the 2010 TSL grand final. And then under your watch, you made the 2009 and 2020 grand final and were unsuccessful. So you hadn't won a flag dating back to 1988, is that correct?
Yeah, yep. So 33 years. Yep. And then it was 40 years. So 81 was the one prior to that.
Yep.
At community level, so
yep.
Yeah, quite a long stint between drinks.
Yep. Did you feel that pressure from the community or the club at all, sort of going into these grand finals?
I definitely felt a lot of pressure going into the third one.
This is last year's?
Yeah, so yep. Last year. And maybe that's pressure placed on myself, not from others, but yeah, I just didn't want to get to a point where we lost the third one. Really wanted to get the monkey off the back, as they say. And
yep.
I mean, I alluded to before around still feeling surreal. I mean, you spoke about the 04, 05 and 06 where Ned was coaching.
Mm-hmm.
And they had a really good side, but fallen over at the last hurdle. So yeah, you want to make sure that you, when you get there, you still got to play your four quarters to get the job done. And yeah, the boys dug deep last year, and Penguin come back hard at us late, and yeah, the boys held strong, and yeah, rest is history.
Yeah, yeah, and I'll talk to you in a second a little bit more about that game, but I think it just goes to, it speaks to how hard they are to win, because as you say, you had a coach like Ned Perry in 04, 05 and 06 get them there, and they weren't able to get across the line, and that's why I sort of ask, you know, how much satisfaction you take in being a coach and getting there. But can you talk us firstly about the 2009 and 2020 grand finals, how those games panned out for you?
Yeah, 2019, obviously we bounced back into the competition with a bit more strength after being pretty lean in 2018. I think we won three games.
Yep.
Or two games in 2018. So we finished bottom of the pile, and to be able to flip that on its head in 2019, we probably sort of, the shackles are off, I suppose, in a way. Like, we was no sort of expectation, was just keep going and see where it takes us and ride the energy that our playing list had, and excitement that we had from the season. And unfortunately we went down by, well, I think it was 6 or 5 to 9 points somewhere there, Bernie the first one, so yep. They got a jump on us and we had to fight back, and we come back hard, but yeah, we left it too late, so one of those things where you can't give up head starts against good sides. And
yep.
That was their second one. So they'd won in 2018 and 2019. Then 2020, we faced them off. They were going for a three-peat, and we were playing some good footy, and yeah, got to the grand final. We probably just didn't do enough work with the conditions in one of the quarters, and left the door open, and they took every opportunity and took it away from us. I think they end up running out winners probably about five, six goals in the second rematch.
Yeah.
But we did throw caution to the wind late, but you got to when you're in that position. Yeah, so
you've either got to risk losing by 100 to win it, don't you?
Yeah, you do. So, but both of those, I think the playing list learnt from going into last year.
Yeah.
And we're keen to rectify.
Yep. You talked there before about you felt pressure that you'd put on yourself going into that, into the grand final last year. Obviously, it was your third one in a row. Do you ever doubt yourself as a coach after you go down a couple of times? Was there ever times when you wondered whether you were the right man for the job?
Oh, you definitely always doubt. I mean, that's part of being...
You would now, surely.
No, not so much, but still...
You'd have to take a bit of confidence.
Yeah, definitely got confidence. Like, I'm a confident person, but everyone's always got self-doubt, and that just depends where you sit on a week-to-week basis with how you're coping with life in general. If you've had a bit of a bad week or a bad game and something hasn't worked, you think, well, what the hell have I done this week, sort of, that was different to last?
Yeah.
It's just about bouncing back, I suppose, and working through whatever those issues are that you might have had, and reinforce something might have worked the first time, didn't work the second time, and just dissecting why, and that power of a reflection to sort of work through that, and giving things a good go and getting a good sample size of things, don't just making a call on after one or two. Everyone's not perfect, so you might have a bit of an off week or a bit of a blooper here or there. So you just got to keep rolling with the punches and
You don't have a sort of any knee jerk reactions then, or jump to any conclusions. You're more practical. You work your way through anything that's not working. And
yeah, that's that big picture idea that I was referring to a little bit earlier. So you might make errors, but you got to learn from them or understand why the error was made and keep progressing forward.
Move on from there. This episode of the pod would not be possible without the support of Sam and the team at Infinite Joinery and Design. If you're like me and normally need these guys to come in after you stuff up your latest home renovation, here's an idea. Get them in first and save the hassle. Specialising in new home joinery fit-outs, renovations, kitchens, laundries, wardrobes, vanities and solid timberwork and project management, Infinite have 3D design software, and Sam alone has over 20 years experience in joinery and project management. He knows his stuff. Located at 6 Bay Drive, Coiba, where you can find them on Facebook and Instagram, or contact Sam at 0429 291 008
or you can email sam@infinitejoineryanddesign.com. So don't be like me, get the experts in first and save yourself some money and a fierce dressing down from the better half. So the game itself last year, the grand final, so firstly, did you have any big omissions or hard conversations that you had to have with anyone in the week leading up to it?
Yeah, we made one call for the grand finals. We had to have a conversation with Taylor McCormack, who was unlucky to miss.
Yep.
We had Luke Keeper, who became available, who was doing his armed services work, and yeah, he became available, and he'd been a very handy player for us throughout the season, and yeah, it sort of changed, kept changing if he was going to be available or not, and then it wasn't, and then all of a sudden it was, and that's just the nature of his job, and we jumped at the opportunity, and yeah, unfortunately, I had to have a hard conversation with T-Mac, and yeah, the rest sort of become history.
Yep.
Luke played really well on grand final day, and yeah, we won and sort of justified the decision.
Yeah.
If it fell the other way, obviously would have been some harder questions to why.
Yeah.
So that probably added to the pressure a little bit, I suppose.
Yeah.
As well.
Yeah. Well, you don't know until the final siren whether you've made the right call, do you?
Yeah, that's exactly right. And I think that was my fourth year of coaching, I don't think I probably would have made that call in the first or second year of coaching.
Yep.
So that was something that obviously with the more experience that I had, that was able to create a headspace that, yeah, well, that is the right call to make.
Yep. How was the conversation? Obviously, you talk about giving people feedback and you know, letting them know that you're going down to the reserves. I'd imagine that takes on an even extra significance leading up to grand final, because it's, you know, he'd obviously think that he was going to play, so it'd probably be something that a bit of a shock to the system for him as well.
Yeah, and I mean, I've had that with a couple of other players in the previous years as well. It's not an easy conversation, and but it's a conversation you've got to just be truthful with and understand that they're going to be upset. And so, yeah, you've got to be there as that sort of comfort as well. And if they're, and then on the flip side, if they're frustrated, you've got to allow them to be. They've got every right to feel whatever emotion that they have. It's just about being clear and allowing them to let them feel the way they want to feel, and let them know that you're there to support them, though. Whether it's a follow-up text message the next day or checking in, yeah, that's something that's really important.
Yep. And the week leading into the game, do you change anything in a grand final week, or do you sort of try to keep it as normal for yourself and the players as you can? Obviously, it's not the same, but...
Yeah, I mean, the focus is always we want to try and keep routine. It's another game, but, yeah, it's quite clearly not another game, so...
Yep.
Trying to keep routine is really important, but yeah, the outside noise obviously picks up, and you've got to enjoy it and roll with the punches, whatever that might bring, and enjoy it and remember the little things as you go through. I mean, some of those early ones, we had some guest speakers come in and speak to the group, where last year we opted against that, just to try and keep that routine so I didn't build up things more than it needed to.
Yep.
Well, I'm not saying that's a difference at all, but yeah, we just try to keep routine as much as we could.
Yeah, because there is a theory sometimes you can actually use a lot of nervous energy if you build it up too much, and then you can actually go into the game exhausted, like you haven't got as much energy as you probably would have because you've played it over and over in your mind so much.
Yeah, exactly, and sometimes you can be over aroused and go the other side, so you can either use all your energy pre-match or you get too hyped and...
go and start belting blokes.
Just get put too much pressure on yourself and just become messy in your skills. So you don't allow yourself to actually function correctly. So pick up the wrong cues. So headspace and having a level head's really important.
Pretty important, yeah. And obviously, I watched the game myself. It was a fantastic game. And like you say, you guys sort of got away early, and then Penguin came hard right at the end. What was your message to the players before the game running out? Do you remember?
Oh, just around setting the scene. I mean, we'd had two opportunities beforehand, and was really strong about, well, we've made it this far. We deserve to be in that position and playing on the last day, and let's go there and enjoy our footy. I didn't go with the message of, well, this is our third time, don't stuff up, because
they'd probably be thinking that anyway.
Yeah, I mean, you don't want to remove any of that self-doubt that's there, because players are going to have that doubt or nervousness anyway, as you said. So yeah, just try to focus on what got us there, what our strengths were, to allow us to play our best footy.
Yep. And how did you feel on the ground as the game was playing out? Because it did look at one stage like Penguin were going to run over the top. Like, if it was another 10 minutes, it would have been quite interesting, because they were sort of coming home with a wet sail. How did you feel as coach out on the field at that time?
Yeah, definitely was getting a little bit nervous in that last quarter. I'd be lying if I didn't come clean with that.
Yep.
But, yeah, to our boys' credit, we managed to hold on, but we did make some errors, some costly errors in that last quarter, and that's probably part of that pressure, and probably not quite doing enough beforehand to sort of get us across the line, not playing out that full 100 minutes, starting to look up and think, oh yeah, we're in a good position here where you can't do that.
Yep.
Which is why you see on the telly that even when a side's up, like we use AFL as an example, they're not celebrating their win or anything like that till that final 10 seconds, regardless of what the scoreline is there.
Yep.
It's business right to the end. So,
yep.
Yeah, that's probably, I mean, if we want to get really nitpick on last year's success, that's something where we probably could have been a little bit better, but we had the success, so it's one of those things that probably get glossed over a little bit.
That's right. It's in the history books now.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
It is.
Do you remember your messaging and communication with the backline in that last quarter? Because obviously you guys were under siege, and I know like Penguin did come hard, but I still think the backline still held up pretty strong. If you didn't have the backline that you did, they would have run over the top of you. Do you sort of throw caution to the wind? Everything's out the window. It's, you know, guts and determination sort of in games like that out there, like when they started to really come at you, just trying to rally the troops out on the field? Or?
Yeah, just reinforcement and communication with each other is really, really strong when you find yourself in those positions, just to try and create that level head. Once something happens, you got to sort of move on from it, park it and leave it.
Yep.
You sort of can't keep dwelling on it. The more you dwell on it, and generally the more it affects a player or affects the next play. So, yeah, just trying to get players to move on and keep going strong with what their strengths are. And
yep.
I mean, like Cohen's mark, like, keep flying for your marks, mate.
Yep.
So.
And he took a few good ones in the last quarter anyway, so.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah.
He did, so.
Stood up.
I mean, he mightn't have taken them all day, but, yeah, he definitely took them when they mattered most.
Mm, yep, you got to have the confidence to keep flying for them, or you don't take them when they matter then, do you?
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Yeah. And it was obviously at the start of the game, it was a pretty physical game. Were you guys prepared for that? Did you know that Penguin was sort of going to be pretty physical to start off with?
Oh, we'd had physical encounters all year, so we were expecting that.
Yep.
It's probably something that clubs historically had probably questioned our side about.
Yeah.
So... Yeah, I was very, very proud of our boys that drew the line and let Penguin know that we're there to go. And I think it's been that line in the sand moment moving forward for us, because the group's very confident in whatever style of game ends up being played, whether that's in tight, the physical game, or one where you have to stand up for yourself, or the one that becomes adapting to the conditions the quickest and moving the footy.
Yep. So you did speak about that before the game, that it could be physical and you might have to fly the flag at some stage?
Yeah, we definitely touched base on it.
Yep.
But it was that idea of, well, we're out there together, let's not leave any stone unturned, and you stick up for your mate and we get through to the end of the game together.
Yep. Are you naturally a brawler? Because I did see you in the middle of it there when it got pretty thick.
No, I think that might have been Nick Milbourne, actually.
No, I don't think so.
No, I'm generally not, no. But, found myself in the situation. And
the bottom of a pack?
Yeah, just sort of. I mean, that's the biggest thing I've probably noticed on the coast. Anything that has happened out in the field has sort of stayed on the field, which I think is really good, healthy competition. Everyone's out there to win and wants to play footy and have an impact. So, yep. Yeah, I mean, to Jack's credit, well, we've known each other a long time, and he knows that it was just part of that game, and we've moved on from it. So,
yeah. But again, you know, with yourself being in there, like, you can't, I suppose, you were talking about your coaching philosophy, you can't expect other players to fly the flag and do a certain thing if they don't see you doing it as well. So,
yeah, exactly. You got to walk the walk. You can't talk about it all the time. So, yeah, that was my turn to be part of that situation, and yeah, had to play my role.
Yep. What was your feeling on the final siren? Can you remember when it went?
Yeah, pure elation.
Yep.
Yeah. So happy that that Simon Serzky was able to capture the relief of the photo. With me sort of clenching fists and jumping in the air, I think I just had a big outburst of yelling.
Yep.
As soon as it went, just of excitement.
Yeah.
So yeah, just so happy that we finally got there.
Yep.
As I said, that monkey's off the back, and still gives me goosebumps thinking about it. So
yep.
Do
you remember who the first person you went to was?
Yeah. Jane Wicks was the closest. He was sort of running at me with shaking his fist and yelling as well. And
yep.
Yeah. Next minute we're embracing each other and jumping all over each other, so
yep.
Yeah, no, he was one of the first ones there, and yeah, then it was like, well, where's the rest of them? Let's go get them, sort of set up. So
it wouldn't have took long, I don't reckon.
No. So yeah, it's just sort of that built up emotion from those previous two losses, and yeah, probably like I said, that pressure probably placed on myself, just all able to exit and enjoy the moment.
Yeah, and it's one of the big I don't know whether anomaly is the right word, but in AFL football, that you have the clock, but you don't actually know exactly how much time still to go. So there's always that element of surprise when the siren does go, whereas in the NBA or somewhere like that, they can see exactly how long there is to go. So I suppose that pure elation, because you know the siren's probably going to sound soon, but you just don't know whether they're going to leak another goal before that happens. So probably just adds to that excitement.
Yeah, it does, and it does get you a bit antsy, that's for sure. So when it went, oh man, the ball was coming back in when the siren went. So man, Cullen took his mark and yeah, managed to switch the footy out. Like, I'm still playing in your head, like, yeah, out to myself, and I've gone to kick it down to Caleb in the next kick, and we're pretty lucky. It was tough, should have been play on, but umpire paid a mark, so we were able to chew another sort of 5 seconds off the clock, and yeah, he just opted for territory, and which is what had been instructed to do.
Yep.
But yeah, we didn't get the stoppage that we needed, and all of a sudden the ball was coming back, but
here we go again.
The siren had gone, so
yeah
it was just great to finish in that way.
There's the moments that you play for, don't you?
Yeah, fighting right to the death, and it's always good for spectators too when you do have a tight tussle.
Yep. And what were the celebrations like? You might not be able to remember a lot of it, but how did it feel sort of going back into the club that night?
Oh, I've never seen that many people in our club rooms.
Yep.
It was a fantastic vibe. Spoke to the playing group and just the whole playing list from under-18s all the way through. We met out on the ground there at one stage, about just enjoying what the night brings and allowing this to be the start of something.
Yep.
Remember how good these feelings are currently, and
yep.
Yeah, if you want to get them again, well, you know what you need to do to get there, and we've got to replicate that again.
Yep. So how soon after you win the premiership are you already starting to think about next year?
Oh, I definitely gave the boys 3 to 4 weeks off.
Yep.
When we had the dinner post that, and once the dinner sort of died away, or finished up, you know, you give them a couple of weeks just to give them that break, and that the break's really important. You get the few ones that are really keen again to sort of ask, well, when do we start? And when's the next date? That's
you see them running around the streets.
Yeah, so that's when you sort of start, oh, it's probably that time where I'll start doing a little bit more. And,
yep.
And if you just give them some skeleton dates around how things are going to look,
yep. That must please you as a coach, though, to know that they're keen. They want to get stuck back into it again.
Yeah, yeah, it definitely does. And yeah, so the ones that missed out, so that's when they started. A lot of them didn't have a break. They just went straight back into it.
Yeah, well, I think I saw Keegan Lowe running like within a week after the game. Like, obviously, he had a lot of heartbreak in that reserves grand final. But yeah, just so you knew he was going to have a good year this year.
Yeah, I mean, he's a great example to talk about. Yeah, he's flying at the moment, and it's all the work that he's put in to get his body in a shape where he can play a different role and contribute strongly week in, week out.
Absolutely. Now, I reckon you made one of the best quotes I've ever heard after the grand final, just in your in your speech. It said, there's big ships, little ships, and premierships, and money can't buy them. Was that pre-written, or was that something you stole off someone else? Or
No, it probably had been a little thought previously.
You're just waiting to use it at some point.
Yeah, I just hoped I could use it.
I'd never heard it before. Is that something that somebody else has used at some stage? Or?
Oh, there's been... I think I've probably merged a couple of things together to make the quote.
So you can take the credit for
it. Yeah, so I'll take the credit for it for sure. But yeah, I mean, we're very proud at our club that players on minimal wage, and they're there because they love the club, and they play for each other. And when you do that, you create a really strong environment, and you get rid of the nonsense that generally finance can bring.
Yep. So what are you going to say this year if you win? You got something written down? Or...
No, not yet.
You'll have to come up with something to top that.
Yeah, I will. I have to start. I'll start at least thinking some ideas, hopefully. Yep. But you can't count chickens before you get there.
Absolutely.
But yeah, two's obviously going to be better than one.
Bloody
so
oath. You come up with something, I'm
but
sure.
But that's a bit of a lame line, that one. So
you'll go better than that.
Yeah, got to come up with something better than that.
Yeah. So how hard did you celebrate afterwards? Like, how many days did you stay on the Terps for? Or were you?
Yeah, no, the boys were still going Tuesday, so
yep.
Some snuck back to work on the Monday, or used Monday as a recovery day to prep themselves for work on Tuesday. But yep. Yeah, that was sort of the week, and then the next weekend rolled around. I think the cup made a few laps around the couple of local establishments.
Yep.
Had to get put to the repair shop, but
knock a few dents out of her.
Yeah, handles re-sewn on and all the rest, but it's back in working order now, so
it's all part of the fun.
It is.
Yeah. There wasn't a point in your celebrations where you took them out to the family farm and lit a bonfire for them by any chance, was there?
No.
I've heard that's not your forte either.
Yeah, that's a good one. We got you that one. Crikey.
Oh, don't reveal me sources. No. Might be somebody that carries very similar DNA to you, though.
Yeah. No, that's...
Apparently he said that, you're not a great fire lighter.
No, I'm a bit of a pyro, but I can think of the story.
You blew yourself up, didn't you?
Yeah, no, I might have lost a jerry can in the process, but nothing that boys don't do. Trying to be either be funny or be silly. And, yeah.
Some are lucky enough to live to tell the tale.
Yeah, correct.
Because you'd poured petrol on it, but didn't the vapor disappear or something? But then you came back with more petrol because you didn't think it had lit properly. Or...
This is going to stitch me up later, but this is funny, though.
Do your parents know about this?
Yeah, they know about it. Okay, I'm more thinking about...
There'll be no litigation, then?
No, I was more thinking about the example I'm setting for others, but, a few vapes on there, and I think I shot a firework at it at the time, and it sort of took off and then petered out, and I thought, it's done its dash, and chucked a little bit on there, and nothing happened. Chucked a little bit more on there, nothing happened. I thought, I must be good then, and chucked a whole heap on, and all of a sudden it went up before my eyes.
Boom. And you soon took off, didn't you?
Yeah, I was out of there like a cut snake, so...
Weren't your boots on fire or something?
Oh, I couldn't tell you, I just got out of there, so... to the laughter of the half a dozen odd blokes there that were helping up there at the day.
I reckon. So speaking about burn on fire, mate, you've got a lot of youngsters that have come through the club and that are doing great things at the moment. Like, you've got Bain and Lowe playing footy over in South Australia now. You've got Lockie Cowan, who's a captain of the Devils. You've got the Kelly brothers, and now you've got Bo Nash as well, that's sort of coming and going out of the Devils. You've obviously got a history of helping develop these players. Do you take... Is there any specific strategies that you use to develop your young players that you can see are going to go on to... to really good things like those guys have?
I mean, those guys have got lots of natural talent, and there's no way I can sit here and take all of the credit for their development. They've got lots of people that provide that for them. But we do have a good environment down at the football club, and it's around pushing players to do the things that they need to do, not necessarily what they want to do. I mean, Bannon's an anomaly. He was a really driven young man, and that speaks volumes of him going over to the Sandford this year. His dream's still alive, and he wants to make it become reality. So, when you deal with players' mentality like that, it makes things a lot easier to help them get where they want to get to.
Yeah.
And those other guys that you listed all have similar attributes, just different levels of talent.
It doesn't just happen by accident, does it? There's got to be a certain level of talent there to start off with, but then they've got to apply themselves, don't they?
Yeah, it does. And sometimes it's those little things that count the most and separate them from other players that are like for like. So
yeah. So that's the coaching out of the way, mate. So what are the plans for the future? How long are you going to go on for, do you reckon?
Yeah, not sure, to be totally honest.
We could have an exclusive here if you announce it now. You've got a bit left in the tank yet, though.
Yeah, I'm getting close to that point on between in our life, me and Bronte, that we take that next step and try for kids.
Yep.
So obviously when that falls, might change things up potentially.
Yep.
But once we've got to get to that point first, but yeah, that's coming in closer and closer than it ever has been.
Yep.
Which is exciting.
Yep.
So for how where it goes and how long it goes, it's sort of just one of those things where it fits into my personality, I suppose, where I just ride it out.
Yep.
Each year's only been a year-to-year proposition, and the club's been supportive of that and understand that, and we just keep going, and as long as I've got the respect of the playing group and the confidence of the board to keep doing the job, I'll keep doing the job.
Yep.
Unless circumstances change. So
yep. Can you see yourself being an off-field coach once your playing days are finished, or would you think that they'd both finish around the same time?
No, I could definitely see being an off-field coach for sure.
Yep.
Obviously I'm trying to maximise my playing capacity at the moment, and a couple of milestones I'd like to try and reach, but that time's also running out with some of these juniors that are pushing me,
putting you under pressure.
They definitely are. Yeah. Which is a credit to them, and I spoke before about being a realist, and when that time comes, the time will come, and so I'm not going to hold other players back, but as long as I'm contributing, I'm doing okay on that side of things on the playing front, and with the coaching side of things, I could see myself being off-field coach and enjoying it just as much as the playing side, and it probably provides a different dynamic, and it definitely will.
Yep.
Having that under the ease of not having to do things as well, obviously will make life a bit easier.
Mm, yep. And so outside of footy, you're teaching up at St Brendan's at the moment. So how do you find that?
Yeah, no, I love teaching.
Yep.
They're very similar to that in coaching. You see growth of an individual, and you face challenging behaviours from time to time, and the importance of giving those teachings to get that individual to the direct win the direction they need to be, and
yep.
to hopefully reach the goals that they want to reach.
Yep. So as a teacher, have you come across any smelly tyres up at St Brendan's?
Yeah. Not as a teacher, but definitely as a student.
As a student.
Yeah.
Do you want to tell that story? Is that one that's right for the airwave? You're a bit of a practical joker, I hear.
I could tell parts of the story. I probably can't tell it in entirety. But for my mates from my school that will know what's going on, that's for sure. But as I said, I was probably a bit of an early bloomer back in the day, so
bit of a man child,
yep. And I know probably got the stick for getting picked on them as well from a few of the boys. So we'd have PE, and all the time I'd have to shower after PE, they'd either wet me towel or throw me undies, wet me undies, or put sunscreen in them, or do something to me that they'd catch me out.
Yeah.
And this one day I took liberty in my frustrations on someone's tie pre-shower.
Yep.
That, they had to wear the tie before they could leave. But yeah, much to their disgust.
Did it last long? Did they wear it for very long?
No, just enough to get out of line of sight of the teacher.
Yeah.
But
it'd be a big penalty with not wearing your tie, I'd imagine, wouldn't it?
Yeah. I mean, uniforms are quite a strong policy. So, yeah, it was quite an enjoyment and one that still brings a lot of laughter many years after.
they've never lived it down.
No, they haven't.
Mate, just a couple of quick ones. You really appreciate you coming in, and thanks very much for your time. Just a few quick ones I want to fire at you. Who's the best player that you played with?
Oh,
well, you can name a couple if you like.
Yeah,
go easy on you.
Yeah, no, a couple might be handy. Obviously, Kurt Hazelwood. Minimal,
he comes up a lot for some reason.
Yeah, minimal time I've played with him, but very handy player.
Yep.
Josh Holland. Gavin Woodcock, Matthew Langmaid, there are a few that sort of pop right to the top of the list.
Yep.
That I've had some learn a bit from, and obviously different players in their own right, but big impacts that they've had.
Yep. And who's the best that you've played against, or who's been your toughest opponent? Who do you have a sleepless night before you go up against them? Or it could be someone from the past.
I always enjoy my, especially over the last probably five years, the competition I've had with Nick McKenna from Burnie.
Yep.
We've always had good competition. Jack Templeton, we've had really good battles with.
Yep.
But yeah, obviously, coming on, I had to go do a bit of digging myself just to get me facts right and me brain aligned to where things happened, and found a 2010 program where apparently Nick Milbourne was the toughest opponent back in the day, so...
That's ironic, isn't it?
Oh, very ironic. And,
yeah, you're coaching him.
And said that the player you wanted most of your club, and it was the same answer. So
yeah, righto.
It was a bit freaky, but yeah. 11 years on, land him at the club and...
You finally got him in his prime.
Got him in his prime and don't have to play on him, so...
Yeah, it's worked well.
Bit of a laugh.
You're still getting some good value out of him, don't worry.
Yeah, we are indeed.
Yeah.
So,
who's the best coach that you've played under?
I'd say Ned.
Yep.
Yeah. Ned definitely taught me a lot. His influence on me as a player and now as a coach, when I speak to him from time to time, his insight's invaluable, and appreciate all his guidance that he's given me across my journey.
Yep. I was going to ask you before about mentors. So obviously he's a mentor of yours. Do you just bounce any ideas off anyone else as well at all?
Yeah. So I've been lucky enough to, have Jade Rawlings as well, who's obviously at Norwood's coach at the moment, but I've had some time with Jade where he's helped me throughout, so dating right back to 2018 when it first sort of kicked off as a bit of a mentor, and it's generally on a needs basis that he allows that, because I know he's got his commitments as well, so so he's definitely another one that sort of falls into that category of bouncing ideas off, which is beneficial.
Yeah. Last question, mate, and you've hit this on the head before because you answered it 12 years ago, but I'm going to ask you again. Who would you recruit to Devonport if you could from around the competition? You can't say Nick Milbourne because you've got him.
Yeah, that's a good question. It'd be hard to go past. It'd be hard to go past either Mavwella or Jack Templeton.
Okay.
I mean, they're two really strong players within the comp that you can build a side around really quickly. There's probably one or two others that are kicking around that you could land pretty quick as well.
Yep.
They're probably the two obvious ones.
Yep. Any young blokes around the competition that you like watching that you think, geez, he's going to be a good player this one?
We played Olsen another week, or this year, so I mean, this is just a fresh one. I think the young kid played his first game, young McKenna, I'm not sure of his first name.
Yep.
But,
played well.
Yeah, he played well, and brought some energy.
Yep. We'll get his manager on the phone after this. He'll be listening to this.
Yeah, yeah. No, I hope he does. I mean, you got young Alex Diprose out the Trobe.
Yeah, like, good player.
He was pretty happy with his work against Smith in the other week, so yep. I'm sure he's still talking about that a couple of weeks on. But yeah, there's lots. I mean, you got Braden Scott out the Trobe as well. Like, he's someone that was I coached back in the day, at junior level. So yeah, there's lots of players like that at other clubs. When you look abroad, but like any club, they become the future of your club, and you got to put all your put all your eggs in the basket to make sure they stay and they're happy, and you get the reward at the end of that cycle with them.
Yeah, you got to sell the dream to them, don't you?
Yeah, you do.
Well, mate, that's all I've got for you. So I've grilled you enough, I think, for one day, and we'll obviously watch your season with interest, because you know, going back to back is one of those things that's not that easy to do in this day and age. So I wish you all the best with it, mate. And, are we getting a taxi home after this, or are we someone picking you up?
No, I might get on the foot patrol today and make use of the good weather. But
that'll be good. Yeah, I'll have my heart in my throat otherwise. You haven't got any coffee, did you? So you'll be right, all your laptops.
So. I did have a coffee this morning, and I made sure I finished it before I hopped in the car, so you'll enjoy that.
You'll be fine, mate. All the best with it anyway.
Yeah, no, I appreciate you having me in today, and hope everyone enjoys listening.
Good on you. Thanks, Kurt.
Thanks, thank you.
Thanks, Kurt, for coming in and sharing your story. It's great to get an insight into the mindset that you need to have and the work needed behind the scenes to be successful on the sporting field. Thanks to everyone for listening. I hope plenty of sports people and coaches got plenty of learnings out of that. And also for the general public, if you're driving, make sure your coffees are kept in a cup holder. And also, if you're having a party, make sure you've got an experienced firelighter to light the flame. We'll talk to you soon.